It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Greece offers its latest reform plan ahead of a crucial EU summit. Embattled Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, seeking a way out of his country's debt crisis, Wednesday pledged to present new concrete proposals involving tax and pension reforms in exchange for further bailout funds from the Eurozone. He addressed the European Parliament in Strasbourg and received a mixed reaction. Michael Thurr is a European parliamentarian.
Well, I was disappointed by what Alexis Tsipras said, because he was announcing a plan, but he did not present a plan. And we need in Greece now no new words and no new promises, but we need deeds.
With his country's banks near collapse and running out of cash, Mr. Tsipras said he's confident of meeting an end-of-the-week final deadline European leaders have given him to reach a bailout deal. He defended his country's reluctance to agree to new austerity measures in exchange for aid, saying 5 years of austerity have proved to be a failure. South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar says the country's civil war will continue as long as President Salva Kiir is in power. He spoke Wednesday in Nairobi as South Sudan's parliament formally gave President Kiir a new 3-year mandate.
Should President Kiir remain adamant and refuse to hand over power to the people, then the citizens have every right to rise and overthrow his regime. The SPLM would like to appeal to all peace-loving member states of the international community to withdraw their support and recognition from the illegitimate and genocidal government of Salva Kiir and isolate it maximally.
South Sudan has endured 18 months of civil war between forces loyal to President Kiir and those allied with Mr. Machar. This is VOA News. Trading on the New York Stock Exchange was halted Wednesday for nearly 4 hours for what was described as technical reasons. U.S. officials did not immediately see a link between the trading halt and the temporary grounding of United Airlines flights or the temporary shutdown of the Wall Street Journal website. Jim Dunnigan, investment director at PNC, says not all U.S. trading was halted.
The New York Stock Exchange is not the hub of activity that it was maybe 10, 12 years ago. Represents less than 0.25% of the daily trading volume. So business is getting done through the other exchanges. There's 11 other exchanges, a number of other private venues. So trading activity is getting done. So little impact on the market as far as an ability to execute trades, and I think market levels reflect that.
U.S. stocks ended the day Wednesday lower, primarily with investor concerns about the Greek fiscal crisis and the state of China's economy. U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes Stephen Rapp told VOA Wednesday those behind ongoing violence in Burundi could face prosecution.
We're deeply concerned about what's happening in Burundi right now, and reports are coming out hourly of peaceful demonstrators being shot down in the street. We're concerned about the possibility of violence, particularly committed by the youth militia, the Imbonerakure, and we're sending the strongest message that we can that those that commit them, and particularly those that incite them and that author them and that arm and deploy the forces that are committing these crimes will be held to account.
He warned those involved in violence and killings would likely end up in the International Criminal Court. The protests were sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a controversial third term in elections set to occur July 15. Top U.S. and Iranian negotiators met for at least 3 hours Wednesday in Vienna, trying to resolve differences in a nuclear agreement one day after world powers extended yet another deadline to reach a final deal. Negotiators have now given themselves until Friday to come up with a comprehensive accord. Witnesses say at least 3,000 Ethiopian troops have entered Somalia, reportedly to attack al-Shabaab militants. The Ethiopian forces invaded Somalia in 2006 to oust an Islamist government there, and since then frequently sent troops across the border. Exiled former Guinea junta leader Moussa Dadis Camara was indicted Wednesday for the deaths of more than 150 people during an opposition rally in 2009. Camara and his lawyer met with two judges from Guinea and Burkina Faso, where he is in exile. He seized power in 2008 after the death of longtime ruler Lasane Conte. Pope Francis is in La Paz, capital of Bolivia, praising that government's social reforms and warning against material wealth, which he says only breeds corruption and conflict. It's the second stop of a three-nation Latin tour. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations calls for an arms embargo on South Sudan's warring factions.
I think it's about conveying the sense we have that this situation is absolutely appalling. There is also this sense that both sides, both leaderships, are responsible for this stalemate.
Hervé Lassus is the United Nations peacekeeping chief. The U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes says Burundian leaders could face possible war crimes. Meanwhile, a Burundian opposition figure says East African leaders failed to resolve the country's crisis. And Nigeria's military says it arrested a suspect believed to be the mastermind of this week's attacks on Jos and Zaria.
It's a result of people who were cordoned and fired at a checkpoint in Dadinkoa, Gombe State, Nigeria. The mastermind of the terrorist act in Jos was arrested along with two others.
Colonel Sani Usman is the acting director of public relations for the Nigerian Army. President Buhari wants to recover money stolen from the Nigerian government, and Tunisia will build a wall of sand against terror. Those stories plus Marco Woman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations peacekeeping chief urged the Security Council on Wednesday to impose a comprehensive arms embargo on both the government and opposition in South Sudan, where a nearly 19-month conflict has killed tens of thousands of civilians. U.S. Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations.
On the eve of the world's youngest country's fourth birthday, peacekeeping chief Hervé Ledsous told a small group of reporters the situation on the ground is absolutely appalling. He cited the conflict that erupted in December 2013 between President Salva Kiir and his deputy-turned-political rival Riek Machar, which has killed tens of thousands and displaced more than 2 million people. More than 150,000 people are being sheltered in six UN protection sites. The United Nations has a force of about 12,000 peacekeepers in South Sudan, but their mobility has been hampered and their relations with the government are strained. Last week, the UN Security Council finally made good on a threat to impose sanctions against spoilers to the political process. It imposed travel bans and asset freezes on three generals loyal to President Kiir and three from the opposition. But Ledsous said that is not enough and that he will urge the council to impose an arms embargo on both parties.
What really should be looked at is a possibility of more sanctions towards more leaders. And I do think, and that's what I said also, that there should be a decision about an arms embargo, because it is really completely questionable that the very meager resources that the country has go into buying more weapons.
The United States, China, and Russia have all previously resisted the idea of an embargo. Human rights groups have increased international pressure for an embargo, urging the Obama administration in particular to support one. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power told VOA that the situation in South Sudan is the result of the complete and utter failure of political leadership by the government and the opposition. And she said the leaders must put their people's interests first. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes says Burundi's leaders could face possible war crimes. Speaking to VOA's Central Africa Service, Stephen Rabb said he is concerned about the violence in Burundi, where peaceful protesters are being shot at. He says the world should send a strong message that those responsible for the violence and killings will likely end up at the International Criminal Court.
We're deeply concerned about what's happening in Burundi right now, and reports are coming out hourly of peaceful demonstrators being shot down in the street. We're concerned about the possibility of violence, particularly committed by the youth militia, the Imbonerakure, and we're sending the strongest message that we can that those that commit them, and particularly those that incite them and that author them and that arm and deploy the forces that are committing these crimes, will be held to account. We heard earlier this statement of the ICC prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda. Keep in mind that Burundi is a state party of the ICC, and this very much could be a situation in which individuals, even leaders, could be held to account for, the, for these crimes. And very clearly, that will happen if this level of killing and incitement continues. It's important to stop the violence, to no longer shoot down people who are exercising their peaceful rights. We're on top of this, though, obviously a situation where the ability to intervene and stop things is limited, but there will be consequences to these acts. One of the things that concerns us the most, we've seen some evidence of it, but there's the kind of rhetoric that occasionally rears its head where people bring back this sort of ethnic issues. And one of the things that was accomplished at Arusha was the end of this kind of ethnic division that we've seen in Rwanda in the past. And frankly, the opposition to the current government isn't coming on an ethnic basis. It's on a political basis. And bringing up issues about the past, going back to Melchior Ndadaye and those kinds of things are frankly an effort to play that card in a way that, as we've seen before in Burundi and as we certainly saw in Rwanda, is devastating to say that this is the fault of a particular ethnicity. One is false, and two is dangerous, and third is the crime of incitement to commit genocide, which is prosecutable in the ICC and under the law of every state.
That was U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes, Stephen Rapp, speaking with Edward Raymond of VOA's Central African Service. A leading member of Burundi's opposition, Frodebu Nyakuri Party, says East African community leaders have failed the people of Burundi following what he says was their failure to implement measures to resolve the political crisis. At their summit in Tanzania's capital, the regional leaders called for a postponement of Burundi's July 15 presidential election. But Issa Ngandakumana from the Frodebu Nyakuri Party says the two-week postponement and the selection of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni as mediator are unlikely to resolve the ongoing political turmoil in Burundi.
We just decided to write a statement just to say that, in our view, the East African Community Summit, which took place on last Monday, is a failure. Because in our view, this summit was there just to take measures to implement what was decided by the AU summit in Johannesburg. They didn't. They only took as measure just to postpone for 2 weeks the presidential elections, and they didn't say anything on the municipal elections and the legislative elections. So we consider that summit was a failure.
So what do you suggest? What do the opposition groups think that should have been done by the EAC heads of state when they met Monday in Tanzania, Dar es Salaam?
Yeah. We think they should push President Nkurunziza Pierre to withdraw, not to apply for a third term as president. Then they should postpone all elections so that we could talk to create a very good environment for elections. And the third, they should help us just to set up elections, fair elections, free elections, and inclusive elections.
As opposition groups, you know, when the EAC met, they chose somebody to help mediate and try to resolve the crisis in Burundi. Are you happy with the decision taken to have a mediator from the heads of state among them to help resolve the crisis in Burundi?
We are not at all. I could also say that if President Museveni is a wise personality, he can't resolve the problems, all the problems we have, in only 2 weeks. That is impossible. That is to escape their responsibilities. So we are not happy with the decision taken by the EAC summit last Monday.
So has the opposition decided to write an official petition to the EAC to complain about these concerns you have?
Yes, we did. We did today. And I think tomorrow they will have our petition.
Issa Ngandakumana is a lead member of Burundi's opposition Frudebu Nyakuri party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Bujumbura. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 9th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Nigeria's military says late Wednesday it arrested a suspect believed to be the mastermind of last Sunday night's attacks on Jos and Tuesday's suicide bombing on a government office in Zaria, Kaduna State. Both attacks killed more than 70 people. News of the arrest came on the same day that President Muhammadu Buhari's government announced that it is ready to negotiate with Boko Haram if the terror group wants to negotiate. Army spokesman Colonel Sani Usman says the arrest of the mastermind, whose name was not given, came at a checkpoint in Gombe State.
It's a result of people and a cordon and search at a checkpoint in Dadunkua, Gombe State, Nigeria. The mastermind of the terrorist act in Jos, you know, at a mosque and a restaurant, and of course at the screening exercise in Zaria, Kaduna State, was arrested along with two others.
How did you manage to do that? Did somebody tip you off or what?
I won't tell you that, but I will tell you that it was a combined operation with the Department of State Service and our own troops.
The supporters of those girls that were kidnapped by Boko Haram, they were protesting again. So the pressure is on the military. Have you people been able to make headway in finding those girls?
The Bring Back Our Girls group had an audience with the president today. So it is not a protest. However, to address the other aspect of your question, the Nigerian security forces, in particular the military, is doing all it could to ensure that they solve the issue of Boko Haram terrorists, along with rescuing all other kidnapped people with them.
Talk to me about how your military is doing in terms of the operation against Boko Haram. Are you making headway?
Exactly, we're making headway. You are quite aware. From time back, the Boko Haram terrorists were also holding territories here in Nigeria. But we have succeeded in locking them out of all those territories, even their phantom caliphate. They are now confined to the Sambisa forest. What you are seeing is a kind of desperate effort by some remnant elements that decide to go back to tactics of bombing isolated or vulnerable or other sub-targets.
And so the joint operation against Boko Haram, how is that going? I know that your president has said that the command should come under Nigeria. Nigeria should be the leader in this joint operation.
It is quite correct. The force commander, or rather the commander of multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission, is a Nigerian, and all efforts are ongoing. Remember again, recently the military command and control center has been moved from Abuja to the epicenter of Boko Haram insurgency, kind of Maiduguri. So there is a renewed effort synergy with all the component groups involved, and effort is ongoing to make sure that Boko Haram terrorists, as it is known, group has been routed out.
Even though you say you are making progress, there are those who say that Boko Haram is getting ahead of you, because look at the number of people who have been killed just over the weekend alone.
We are not in competition with terrorist organizations. What I want you to understand is that when you look at the activities of these terrorists within the last 12 months, or let's say even 3 or 4 months ago, definitely there is no basis for comparison, because the level of atrocities have been degraded.
Colonel Sani Usman is the acting director of public relations for the Nigerian Army. He was speaking with me from Abuja, Nigeria. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has made fighting corruption a cornerstone of his agenda. As Chris Stein reports for VOA, one way the president plans to do that is by tracking down money stolen from the country's coffers.
For years, Nigerians have pledged to get money back from their predecessors. Former President Goodluck Jonathan's administration, for instance, secured a deal to recover money from late dictator Sani Abacha. And now President Muhammadu Buhari's government is saying he has won support from the United States and European governments to find more money spirited away from Nigeria. President Buhari has not been specific about which administrations he plans to probe. but he won office partially on the votes of people concerned about corruption under the administration of Mr. Jonathan. While Mr. Buhari said in his inaugural address that he was not looking to settle scores, analysts say Mr. Jonathan's administration will be a likely target for any probe. Policy and Legal Advocacy Center Executive Director Clement Nwankwo.
Certainly we hope that he doesn't go into persecuting people, but certainly some of this corruption is so fresh and so deep, don't think that he can avoid it.
Corruption has long been cited as one of the reasons why millions of Nigerians remain impoverished, despite the country producing more oil than anywhere else in Africa. But even high-profile efforts to win back money, like the recovery of $380 million allegedly stolen by Mr. Abacha announced earlier this year, have not necessarily benefited Nigerians, says Adayat Hassan, executive director of the Center for Democracy and Development.
The Abacha loot was recovered. Lots of loot were recovered. But what in actual fact were those funds used for? That will also be the next step Nigerians will have to focus on.
President Buhari's administration could use all the money it can get. The president recently described the treasury as virtually empty. This week, the government said it would tap into a special account for excess money made from oil sales to pay down the country's debts. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
Tunisian Prime Minister Habib Essaih says his country is starting to build a wall of sand along the border with neighboring Libya to stop terrorists from infiltrating Tunisian territory. The Tunisian government has been taking preventive measures to try to stop a repeat of the terror attack, which left 38 tourists dead on June 26. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
The terrorists who trained in Libya and gunned down 38 tourists on a beach last month has forced the Tunisian government to take action to prevent further attacks from taking place and assure skittish tourists that Tunisia is safe. Prime Minister Habib Essaih. Speaking Wednesday on state TV, Essaih says the Tunisian army will build a 160-kilometer-long wall along the length of the country's border with Libya, with a moat next to it. The prime minister indicated that the wall would be made of sand and would be finished by the end of the year. He said security cameras and surveillance posts would be placed at regular intervals. Essaih added that the recent decision to impose a state of emergency was prompted by fears that outside plotters were acting to carry out further acts of terrorism and mass killings to destabilize and demoralize the country. Tunisian gunman Saif Eddin Rezgi reportedly trained with Islamic militants in Libya before carrying out the bloody June 26 attack at the Imperial Marhaba Hotel in the resort town of Sousse. Tunisian officials have said the drop in tourism resulting from the attack will cost the country nearly $500 million this year alone. Egypt is facing similar troubles after a series of high-profile attacks inside that country. Khatar Abu Diab of the University of Paris tells VOA that he doesn't think that building a wall is going to be sufficient to solve Tunisia's security problems and that the measure could have adverse effects as well. He says that given the existence of terrorism sanctuaries in various places, many think they can protect their security by building barriers, as Israel did with the Palestinian territories, or Europe is trying to do in the Mediterranean. But he argues such preventive measures will be difficult to enforce given the length of the borders involved and lengthy shared coastlines. Abu Diab also stresses that Tunisia and Libya do a great deal of black market trading along the border and that building a wall could adversely affect the economy of both countries. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsor here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our daybreak after sports news, we begin with rugby. Madagascar edged Ivory Coast 30-26. Hosts Uganda outplayed Mauritius 35-11 as Botswana beat Senegal 26-21. At the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1B Africa Cup in Kampala on Wednesday. On Saturday, Senegal engage Ivory Coast. Madagascar play Mauritius as Uganda encounter Botswana. In athletics, Lebohang Shange won men's 5,000-meter race walk in a new South African record of 18 minutes and 56.84 seconds at the Cork City Athletics meet in Ireland on Tuesday night. Nigerian Miles Ukaoma and Namibian Roger Haitengi were runners-up in men's 400-meter hurdles and long jump, respectively, as Sierra Leone's Solomon Bokari was third in 100 meters. Elsewhere, at the Isfan Gulay Memorial Grand Prix in Budapest, Hungary, Kenyans Ronald Kwemoy, Jairus Bire, and Nancy Chepkemoi triumphed in men's 1500 meters, 3000 meters steeplechase, and women's 1500 meters, respectively, as South African Karina Horn was third in women's 100 meters. Meanwhile, Kenyan Viola Lagat won women's 1500 meters in a lifetime best of 4 minutes and 4.10 seconds at the European Athletics Classic meet in Lignano, Italy. South African Anaso Jobodwana and Ethiopian Gutema Bekele were second in men's 200 meters and women's 1500 meters, respectively. In football news, Senegal challenged Argentina at the start of their campaign at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Espino, Portugal, today, Thursday. Tomorrow, Friday, African champions Madagascar play Tahiti. On Saturday, Senegal challenge Portugal as Madagascar meet Russia on Sunday. In cricket, Namibia play hosts Ireland in Stormont as Kenya face Canada in Edinburgh, Scotland, at the start of their 2016 ICC World 2020 qualifiers tomorrow, Friday. On Saturday, Kenya play Oman as Namibia engage Nepal. Turning to volleyball, Tunisia edged host Turkey by 3-2 in a friendly in Istanbul. Tunisia won an earlier tie 3-1. The Tunisians are gearing up for the Men's Africa Volleyball Championship starting in a fortnight. Finally, in Australia, African champions Kenya play Australia at the World Women's Volleyball Grand Prix in Canberra on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma. In Johannesburg, South Africa, back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, July 9th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. The reason why Nigerians are running out of patience with President Muhammadu Buhari over the fight against Boko Haram is because of the serious increase in the activities of the Islamic extremists, which has extended to just Plateau State and Kaduna again after a long while. Whereas Nigerians were looking at Buhari as a messiah that will quickly end the activities of the terrorists, as earlier promised in his campaign. Albert Alagbo from Akanibi Federal Polytechnic, Ebonyi State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Sudan's rebel leaders says the country's civil war will continue as long as President Salva Kiir remains in power. Riek Machar spoke to reporters in Nairobi, Kenya, on Wednesday as South Sudan's parliament formally gave President Kiir a new three-year mandate. Lawmakers had voted to extend the president's mandate back in March. Machar said that according to the constitution, President Kiir's term ends at midnight, July 8th. And the United States Ambassador at Large for War Crimes says those behind ongoing violence in Burundi could face prosecution. That is it for this Thursday, July 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Butter saying have a lovely day.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing bribery, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama soon makes his last trip to Africa as president. He will attend the Global Entrepreneurial Summit in his ancestral homeland, Kenya. He will also travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, will join him. And she will be Shaka Sali's guest next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.